let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello and welcome back to the Tech Talk miniseries here on Let's Talk About. First, I want to apologize for no episode last week. I had one prepped, recorded. It was all about the exorcism that was performed at a children's camp in Saskatchewan. But try as I might, I was not happy with the end product and didn't feel comfortable putting it out. That's a topic that I'm probably going to want to revisit at some point, but, I just felt that the episode wasn't good enough. It wasn't enough for, what I wanted to do and what I want the show to be. So I just canned it, and, you know, there's been a lot of things going on personally for me this week, or last week. So it was difficult. And I didn't have time to record a different episode and put it out in time, so it is what it is. But here we are, a long weekend later, and we have an interesting new technology story. And this one has been making the rounds globally, but it is a Canadian story. I'm reading directly from an article on CNN Travel. Canada might be getting a 10,000 kilometer per hour vacuum tube train. This article is by Maureen O'Hare of CNN, and it was published when you're listening to this 5 days ago on September 1st. Reading directly from the article, a Canadian company has unveiled plans for a fully electric train-style vehicle which could travel at 1,000 kilometers per hour and, it claims, would cost less than a plane ticket to travel on. Fluxjet was announced by Transpod in its home city of Toronto last month, where a scaled-down one-ton version of what it terms the plane-train hybrid featuring in a live demonstration of its capabilities. It's based on similar principles to the Hyperloop concept made famous by U.S. entrepreneur Elon Musk. Flexjet will be propelled at ultra-fast speeds along a protected tube guideway using groundbreaking technology based on a new field of physics called valence flux. Now, important line there, in the first little bit, would cost less than a plane ticket to travel on. Now, this is something that I think everyone listening, if you're from Canada, has dealt with. I have recently dealt with this because I've been looking for flights to BC for quite a while for a wedding that I'm supposed to be at. And my family had tickets booked and they were canceled. There was one flight on this airline, which was a budget airline, to the place we wanted to go to, and they canceled that one flight. Didn't cancel the return flight, but canceled the one that was there. And In compensation, they offered us to reschedule our flight to when to 2 days after we would have gotten back. Or actually a day after we'd gotten back. So that's not good. And any alternative was in the thousands of dollars. I've flown all over Canada, really. I've flown to Toronto a few times, once direct, once to Hamilton, then traveled to Toronto by train. And then I've been as far east as Charlottetown, and I've flown as far west as Vancouver on my way to Japan. It's inordinately expensive, and there is a reason for that. And that comes back to something we've talked about a lot on this show, which is Crown Corporations. Back in the day, Air Canada used to be owned by the government. It used to be owned by Canadians. It was a Crown Corporation that operated essentially at a break-even cost. The way that Crown Corporations tend to run when they provide services at as cheap a price with the costs spread throughout most of the society. In terms of, you know, Manitoba Hydro, it's the only game in town for for power here in Manitoba. So the cost is shared evenly across the province, or shared across everybody in the province, not equally, because some people have more power demand than others. Planes were kind of a similar situation. You had Air Canada, which was operating to be kind of to set the price. You would have airlines that could charge a little bit more, and that would be fine, but it was priced in a way where it would be very difficult for an airline to charge less than what Air Canada was charging, because essentially all they had to do was break even. They had to provide zero loss, more or less, maybe a little bit of a gain if you factor in international travel and foreign money coming in that was used for plane tickets and different amenities for Air Canada. But for the most part, Air Canada was meant to be the price control for airlines, until Brian Mulroney, who also privatized Petro-Canada, and we saw how well that went, privatized Air Canada in order to throw a little bit more money at the budget to try and make the deficits that he drove up as his time as prime minister a little bit more manageable. So what we have now in Canada is a completely privatized system where you have large corporations that run airfare in Canada. The only problem, because, you know, we have airlines in other countries that have to travel the similar distances and in similar conditions as Canadian airlines. So it's not a problem of geography or a problem of climate. It is a problem of greed. Another policy here in Canada is meant to preserve Canadian corporations in the aviation industry. And it is meant to ensure that Canada can operate its own airlines domestically. It would be very easy, and there's a lot of policies like this in Canada because we have the U.S. so close, we have it as our next door neighbor, and it would be very easy for a lot of American companies to come in, buy up Canadian companies, and then provide a service to them. But as a country, you want to be self-sufficient. You want to be able to provide as many things as possible domestically, so you are not at the whims of another country doing something for you. You're seeing a lot of that in a lot of other countries which don't have rich oil reserves, being in a way controlled by countries like, you know, Saudi Arabia, like Russia, like China, like the United States, in ways because they depend on those for a very vital resource for a modern society, which is fuel. As a country, you want to be able to handle all of those things domestically. In Canada, for, you know, all its faults, our economy can effectively survive as a closed system. There are not very many things we need. You know, we provide our own, we can grow our own food, we can provide our own livestock, we generate our own power, we can, you know, mine our own minerals, we can get our own oil, we have our own oil reserves, we have kind of everything that we need our own internet infrastructure, our own power infrastructure. And the one thing that makes living in a large country and keeping a large country together is being able to travel easily from one place to the next. That's why the CN Railway, which this would be piggybacking off of in a lot of ways, probably, knowing how these projects usually go, was so important to drawing together. Like, you can think of the CN Railway coast to coast as this band that pulled the country together and made sure Canada was a united whole. But going back to the airlines, what's happening right now is we have a policy that only Canadian airlines can offer flights to and from Canadians to, like, direct flights within Canada. So if you're an American that's flying to, say, Montreal, you're either going to have to go directly from your country to Montreal, or your country to Toronto, your country to Ottawa, or you will have to go to, say, Winnipeg, get off your plane, you know, whatever airline that might be, and then transfer onto a Canadian airline, then fly from Winnipeg to Toronto or Calgary or whatever. And for Canadians, our only option for domestic flights going from, say, the flight that I was supposed to be on, Winnipeg to Kelowna, you have to fly with a domestic operator. And that's done to ensure that Canadians only have, you know, Canadian companies that are owned by Canadians, run by Canadians in this country, are controlled by Canadians, that a vital transportation avenue is controlled by Canadians operating within Canada. So the fact that this would be cheaper than a plane ticket is very important, because this will move a little bit faster than an airplane. It'll be probably equivalent if you're talking about coast-to-coast travel. But what it does, the good thing would be, being cheaper than a plane ticket means more people would want to use it. So if they can kind of match the speed and the comfort with a lower price point, they'll be able to get a lot more. Now, how will something like this work? The pods are magnetically levitated, and the vacuum tubes allow them to travel at great speeds. So what it does is, these tubes, like the Hyperloop concept that Elon Musk talked about and hasn't really done anything with, it will use magnets like the maglev trains in, say, Japan, which I've traveled on, and they're really, really cool. That uses magnets to lift the pod up in the air, and the tube creates a vacuum seal. So there's effectively no friction and nothing to stop the pod from moving forward. So then the magnets pull the pod forward and essentially throw the pod down the track, down through the tube, and, you know, the magnets keep it from bumping into the walls, and the tube will, because it is a vacuum, the pod will just continue moving, because there are no particles in there to hit the, to cause resistance to and drag to the pod. So the pod just slides through frictionless until the magnets can, you know, power on and begin to slow the pod down until it comes to a stop. It's a really, really amazing piece of technology using vacuums and electromagnets to be able to create this perfect system, this frictionless, airless system. Obviously, the pods themselves will be sealed, so you'll have oxygen in the pods. I know people talk about that all the time, about the fear that, like, you know, if your car windows are closed or you don't have the fan on, you'll eventually suffocate because you lose all the air in the car. That's not really a thing, but still, you would need to cycle air through and bring air into this system somehow. But you would have these sealed compartments that people can move around in and be in and look out from and continue on. And the art for these is really, really cool. I'll leave it in the show notes. Looks very, very futuristic. It's awesome. But again, reading for the article, the idea is that the train will operate exclusively on a network system dubbed the Transpod Line, with stations in major cities and key locations. The proposed first phase of what there's a typo in this article, by the way, I'm just reading this now. The proposed first phase of what will be an estimated $18 billion infrastructure project will be linking the Canadian cities of Calgary and Edmonton, some 300 kilometers apart, or a three-hour drive. There's actually currently a train line that runs between the two, and there's also a highway that runs between the two, and it's a three-hour drive, as the article says. FlexJet boasts travel speeds faster than a plane and three times that of a high-speed train, meaning that it would cut the journey down to about 45 minutes. That's incredibly important. So just so you know, the distance, if this can reach 1,000 kilometers per hour, and considering the fact that it won't be at 100 or at 1,000 kilometers per hour for the entire journey, it's going to slow down as it has to raise and lower over natural rises and falls in the Canadian geography, and it's going to have to turn and all of these other things. It's not going to be a straight line right across, and it's going to have to slow down and speed up as it passes cities and things to let people off. But east to west, Canada stretches roughly 7,560 kilometers, crosses six time zones, and is the second largest country in the world. This, if it reaches 1,000 kilometers per hour, would roughly get you from, let's say, get you from Charlottetown to Vancouver Island in about 7.5 hours. We'll say 8 hours, 8.5 hours, just to pull in the numbers of stops and things like that. So really, the time that it would take for you to drive from here to Regina, here in Winnipeg to Regina, is roughly 6-7 hours. It was just a little bit longer. If you left Winnipeg and drove to Regina, you would arrive in Regina, you know, a couple hours before this pod goes from Charlottetown to Vancouver Island, theoretically, which is absolutely insane. One of the major things that made Winnipeg what it was and made Winnipeg such an important city was that it was the last major stop before BC on the rail lines. You would bring everything to Winnipeg and it would get shipped from Winnipeg to BC because there wasn't very much between the two. Saskatchewan and Alberta weren't large enough at the time, and for a while weren't part of Canada. So you had this open stretch, and what this would do is would bring that kind of transportation hub back to Winnipeg. But also it would provide an easy, affordable, and important, very, very importantly, a clean way to get from one end of the country to the other. Going back to the article. Earlier this year, the TransPod announced that it has so far secured $550 million in financing for the endeavor. The project is currently in the research and development phase, focusing on environmental assessment and land acquisition. That's very important in Canada, because a lot of Canada is crown land. You're going to have to acquire that. And when you're building rail lines, you have to deal with provincial governments, municipal governments, federal government, the federal government, and indigenous governments, because you're going to be passing through treaty land as well. It's the same problem that pipelines have. You have to discuss with indigenous communities and say, hey, we want to go through your land. How are we going to get this to work? So that's good that they are working on that particular function. What is annoying is that it's still in the research and development phase. So Sebastian Gendron, co-founder and CEO of Transport, tells CNN that the first phase of the construction consists of the connection of the Edmonton Airport, which is planned to start at the end of 2023, and the full line connecting Calgary to Edmonton in 2027. It's going to take 4 years. This is an incredibly complicated project. It takes like, by the way, this is the end of the quote. This is me talking. This is an incredibly complicated project. You need to create a rail line that is giant magnets all the way along. You have to deal with land issues, you have to deal with making sure that you remove environmental waste properly, you dispose of things properly, you need all of the glass to create the vacuum seals, you need to test everything to make sure that it'll stand up, you need to test the trains thousands of times to make sure they work, that they make sure that they work on the tracks, that you have to test for all different eventualities for emergencies and all of that, and have all of these different things in place. So it's going to take longer than 4 years, I'll say. Their estimate's a little bit conservative, or a little bit optimistic. I would be more conservative and say like 2030 would be a good time for this to be done. But so that's 8 years away. So back to the article. The network will transport up to 54 passengers and 10 tons of cargo at a time in Fluxjet vehicles, with trains departing every 2 minutes, according to TransPod's vision. The company says the new system will help cut highway traffic massively, as well as reducing CO2 emissions by around 636,000 tons per year. It claims that riding the Fluxjet will cost around 44% less than a plane ticket for the same journey. But with no timeline yet announced for when the public might expect to travel on a Fluxjet, or which other cities might feature on this multi-billion-dollar network, those projections do seem to involve a fair amount of conjecture about how the next few years might pan out. That's what has me worried. TransPod says that its focus is on first-in-the-world designs and technological breakthroughs, and it's developing every aspect of the new tube transportation system, from designs to systems engineering, from the ground up, all in-house with our partners. The magnetically levitated Fluxjet trains will shoot down their guideways using aerodynamic and propulsion systems that have been designed to reduce friction. TransPod says the experience will, quote, feel like accelerating smoothly on a jet runway and then coasting at full speed inside the tube guideway, end quote. Gendron tells CNN that his team estimates the Fluxjet will be transporting its first public transport passengers before 2035. And as for plans beyond Calgary Edmonton, he says that, quote, discussions are already happening in Texas to connect Dallas to San Antonio, in the UAE to connect Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and in Australia to connect Sydney and Brisbane, end quote. So they're setting their sights pretty high. I would really, here's where I kind of come into this. I would love for federal and provincial governments to get in on this now. This is important technology. If TransPod, like, once this Edmonton to Calgary thing is done and it works, I hope that the federal government and the provincial governments will be lining up to get this done to connect the entire country. It's good for the taxpayers, it's good for them, it's good for the economy to have not just a green way to transport things, but a very fast, efficient, and effective way to transport large cargo shipments from coast to coast. It's like one of those things where you take a step back to take a massive leap forward. You need to go back to the past and say, okay, what were these things that worked? Oh, these things can work just as good in the future if we kind of collectivize things a little bit more. It's easy to point and look at how car transportation has changed things. It's liberalized things, it's individualized things, but it's also made things a lot less efficient because you have a whole bunch of people. I was just driving on the highway today, so I know this very, very well. You have a bunch of different people who have different needs, who are going different speeds, who have different situations and setups, all trying to use the same singular two-lane resource to get from point A to point B. And those point A's and point B's are different. And those journeys are different. What this will do is homogenize what everybody is doing. You will have one easy way to get from Winnipeg to Regina in an hour. And what you need to do is get on this one rail line. It will get you there very quickly. You just have to, you know, be on there with a lot of other people. It's going to be comfortable, but you're going to have to be around people. And that's the way that it used to work. It used to work with trains that way. It's like you need to go from here, from this settlement to that settlement. Well, get on the train and go. You're going to have to sit next, rub shoulders with other people, but you're going to get there on our schedule when we want you, when we can get there. You will leave when we can leave. You will get there when we can get you there. Which may seem for a lot of people annoying, but that's the kind of the price you pay for a service like this and to get there quickly and efficiently. I've talked a lot about on this show about how governments are the first step. They, in a lot of cases, are the first push that technological innovations get. They provide funding to universities or startups that are unproven, untested, and say, here's a bunch of money, go do this thing, and report back with the results. And those are the first steps that get people to do things. That's the first step that got us to the moon. This is the first step that got us Wi-Fi and radar and, you know, it's in airplanes. Like, it's, governments are great at getting in on the ground level and giving money to people who can use it to make these innovations, and then hands it off to the private, you know, to the market to continue things, to get things done more efficiently or cheaper or whatever. And that has, you know, positives and negatives associated with it. But I think that this is something where, you know, the discussions at the end really worry me, because they're already talking to different cities and different countries, and they're like spreading themselves very thin. And that's where a project like this could collapse. They're trying to do too much too soon when they're still in the research and development phase, and they're still in the systems engineering. You know, they're building this thing from the ground up with their team without any kind of outside help, really. They have some partners, I'm assuming. That's what the one quote says in the second to last paragraph. But the fact that they're talking to other countries and talking to other like municipalities to try and do something there, giving them the same sales pitch, worries me, because they're going to be spreading their resources very thin, and that's how a project like this can collapse. It would be very easy for, you know, the Canadian government and the provincial governments to come in and say, hey, you're going to get this done for us. We're going to give you the money to do this. You're going to get it done for us. We're going to set up. We're going to get a line that runs coast to coast. Prove it here. Get it done on a big scale here. Refine it and do it other places. We will fund you this whole way. We will fund you as far as you can take this. And that's, you know, that's what, you know, the United States did in a lot of ways. That's what the English government did in a lot of ways. That's what the French government did. It's what a lot of world governments, is what China does very, very well right now, is the state funds and sets up companies or funds private enterprises to do really sometimes scary, sometimes important things, to get things done very quickly, to get innovations off the ground, because the biggest thing you need to get something done is money. When you're in the research and development phase, the biggest hurdle you have is not finding smart people. There are smart people all over the world. It's the money to support those people and support those innovations moving forward, and that's what governments are really good at doing. This is a potentially amazing piece of technology that could change our lives forever. It can make coast-to-coast travel extremely affordable for average Canadians. It will help, you know, connect the cities in a way that they could not be connected before, or were connected before and were disused. It would mean we could transport goods faster and more efficiently. We wouldn't have to worry about, you know, having to keep food, you know, frozen food products frozen much longer. It would be, they'd be able to keep a lot better, be able to get them to market a lot faster. It would reduce the cost of transportation and the, you know, the cost to get things to market. It would really help make things more efficient and save a lot of money, save a lot of time. And really, the great thing about this is it's great for the environment. It's that 663,000 tons per year that are used to ship things. I've said countless times on the show, shipping is one of the major points that creates the most greenhouse gas emissions on the planet. If we can solve that, we can solve a lot of our problems when it comes to climate change. All right, that'll do it for me. Thank you very, very much for listening. This is Let's Talk About. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. If you've been listening live on 101.5 UMFM, keep that dial at 101.5. We've got great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everyone.